Welcome to Spartan Up Podcast. I am so stoked about this one. You want to talk stoked, you talk Ray Zahab. Joe, you got to meet him. So we got Joe, Colonel Nye, Sephra, Johnny, Marion. And this week, Ray Zahab. Ray's a good friend of mine, Canadian, one of the greatest adventurers you'll ever meet. Joe, how was this guy for energy?
He was full of energy. I was nearly dead. I was sick as a dog. I don't know what I had, but I stumbled down there, and I'm glad I did because he is a ball of energy.
Yeah. You're going to hear all about it, but truly told you a story about almost dying on the first leg of a three-leg adventure.
Three-legged adventure.
You know, if anyone can cross the Arctic in a three-legged adventure, it'd be Ray. Find out about it. Seriously, find out about him almost dying and then coming back to finish it anyway. Beyond belief, this guy's story.
Charity, the charity that brought this one?
Oh, you know what? Impossible to Possible, which is actually Ray's charity, his foundation. It's all about just helping kids realize that there's more available and helping them see where they can help others.
We are here for Spartan Up Podcast, and I think I am dying. We were with Ray Zahab, but I can't complain because this guy is an absolute lunatic. So give us a couple of things you've done.
Wow. I mean,
You crossed the Atacama Desert.
So I ran across the Atacama Desert, driest place on Earth, north to south, 1,200 kilometers, 800 miles.
Easy.
It's pretty hot.
Easy day.
Pretty hot, though. Pretty hot. 50 degrees Celsius, which when you translate it into Fahrenheit is like damn hot. That's what the, you know, the bombers.
And that was because you were out of food and maybe...
You just couldn't get a car.
Couldn't get a car to drive.
And I've been across the Sahara with your friend Charlie Angle. We ran across it together. That was another 4,500 miles.
You like sand.
I like sand, but I like snow. I've been to the South Pole, unsupported, from the ocean to the pole, Hercules. And I've been across Siberia. In winter, unsupported, the Arctic,
Siberia.
Blah, blah, blah.
Siberia.
Yeah. Siberia's cold. Yeah. It's either, you know, as you can imagine.
Yeah. So tell us about Siberia. That's interesting for me.
Well, you know what? It was my buddy Kevin Valley and I wanted to do something a little bit different. So Lake Baikal is the world's most voluminous source of fresh water.
Yeah.
And so what we did was an unsupported run the entire length of Lake Baikal in winter. So what I try to do is I use my expeditions as a portal to the places I'm in. So I go to Siberia or I'm in the Gobi Desert running across it, and I have a complete satellite system where I'm able to broadcast it into classrooms. So students, actually anybody, can join in with video footage and photos and stories that we're putting up every day. So when we went to Lake Baikal, we thought it's a great way to connect with kids in schools about water when you're running across most of it, the fresh water on the planet, right, in Lake Baikal. You take all three great lakes and put them in Lake Baikal, so we ran across it.
So how'd that go? How did the students react?
Oh, they love it. I mean, you know, we were doing conference calls like, you know, on this software called Digicom. We were like doing video conferences live with students at like 1 a.m. in Siberia. And it's like different times all over the world. And the whole thing, the kids, so you're immersing them. You're bringing them onto the expedition. So they're part of it, right? So it's a cool experience for them, no pun intended.
So it's mostly 5-star hotels along the way that you check
Pretty
in?
Much. The 5-star hotels where you're burning paint thinner in your stoves because the Russians didn't have white gas and you're inhaling those fumes. It's that kind of 5-star.
Nice. So what was the toughest expedition you ever did?
You know, it's a great question. I always say it's the last one I've done. You know, I've done 15 big, huge trips since running across the Sahara. Running the Sahara was the longest at 111 days. The South Pole, we were hauling 185-pound sleds, you know, uphill to the geographic South Pole for 30 days, you know, 35 days. That was hard. But I have to say, the crossing of the Atacama, because it was so hot and I was averaging about 40 miles a day, or the unsupported crossing trip I just did in the Arctic. So I crossed three regions of the Canadian Arctic in winter, first section on foot, almost died going in a river. Second section on skis across Baffin Island, hauling everything. And then third section, fat bike through the Northwest Territories in winter. So it's like a mix of three things that made it hard.
Yeah? So the reason it's the last one, that's usually your answer, because you're still feeling the pain?
Yeah, you just remember everything, right? Yeah. It's fresh in your mind. Yeah. I think, you know, we spend so much time in our lives, you know, thinking about what we used to do or what we've done rather than what's happening in the moment, right? And what I've learned to do through the adventures that I'm doing is, like, I'm willing to take a chance. I'm willing to put it out there. And it always seems in my mind like it's a great idea. And then I get out there, and I'm like, what the hell, right? Because things can go wrong.
Sure.
Right? But, you know, the last one always seems to be the top because it's so fresh in your mind. But I try not to dip too far back into the past and compare.
What do you bring? What you bring, like, a coffee pot and... like mattress, or what do you bring on these things?
So on an unsupported, like on an Arctic trip, you're bringing everything. So unsupported means you are self-contained. So you've got all the gear you need to survive, all the food you need to survive for the entire crossing, if you will. When I'm running across the Atacama, or when I ran across the Gobi was over 2,000 kilometers. I'm not running with everything on my back. It's impossible. It's too hot, right? Yeah. So that, I usually have a film crew or photographer, some guys I'm working with, and I'll GPS myself or navigate with maps 30K at a time or so and get resupplies and try to do about 60, 70K a day, 30, 40 miles a day.
How often do your resupplies not show up?
It's happened. In the Atacama, that was one of the reasons when you first asked, and I said, well, I think the Atacama north-south.
Sure.
The heat's one thing, but... You know, we were running, if you're familiar with the Atacama Desert, it's very narrow. It's in Chile, it's the driest place on Earth, 800 miles long, but narrow, like 200K wide, 250K wide, at its widest point. And most of that land is under mining, like there's mining certificates for all that land. It's all been staked, although there's no mines. You'd be running forever, and there's nothing out there, right? Mm-hmm. Nothing. But along the only highway that goes north-south through Chile are the access points. So my crew is like wiggling their way through desert or whatever they can with land cruiser. It's set to a preset GPS waypoint. They're going to meet me there with my supplies. Well, I take off, 52 degrees Celsius, whatever that is, 100 billion degrees Fahrenheit, and I'm out running, and I'm like 30K. No one's here. 40K, sat phone. Guys, I'm past the point by 10K. We can't get in because that gate at the only road that'll give us access... The mine won't let us in. That's all mine. So there's no mine. There's a mine. It's a mine. That's we can't get to you. Keep moving. We'll do the best we can. 50K, no resupply. So now I'm shriveling up, right? So I pull into my bag, because I carry everything. I try to plan everything as best I can. And I pull out of my pack, you know, my emergency shelter, and I get into this, and I put my back to the sun. I've got a little bit of water left that I kept just in case of an emergency. I'm not eating anything because, you know, I got to use that water just to stay hydrated. And not digest, and I'm like just thinking, oh my God, am I gonna, like seriously, am I gonna bite it out here? Am I gonna like just dry up? Sure. And as soon as I was this close to giving up, I could hear them way off in the distance. You know, I could see this little plume of sand coming, and they got to me, they were all freaked out, you know, because I thought I was gonna die. So,
nice.
Anyway,
well, you need
those. I don't know where we were going with this, but anyway.
No, but you need those things in life, right? You need to push yourself up against the wall. So there's a bunch of people out there watching this, they're having a tough time getting off the couch. They're having a tough time in their relationship, their job, whatever. Mm. What can you take from everything you've done that they could apply to their lives to be more successful?
I've said this. It's a good question. I've said this so many times. When Charlie, Kevin, and I got to the edge of the Red Sea after 4,500 miles of running, right, and we each had our hands above the water, like when our hands would go in the water, it would mean the end of the expedition. And I remember for a split second looking at Charlie's hand, Kevin's hand, and my hand and saying, I'm the same as these guys. But 3 years, 3.5 years before the day we reached the edge of the Red Sea was when I really took up running. And 7 years before the day we reached the Red Sea, I was just quitting a pack-a-day smoking habit, being an unhealthy guy. I mean, it's a typical ultra-running story, right? But I think that what I try to share with people is those tough times that you go through in life are very relative to yourself. You can't compare how you feel to how anyone else feels. Just like when you achieve something great, you can't compare it to somebody else that's achieved something. So for somebody who's thinking about doing something, I spent the first 30 years of my life talking myself out of doing shit for fear of what may happen, or if I get it wrong, or if somebody, you know, thinks it's shitty or whatever. It's time, you know, this is what I encourage people to do, is take that chance. You got an idea in your mind of what it is that you'd like to do, take the first steps to making it happen, and you'd be surprised where your life will take you. So for me, I had no idea that through this life change that I decided to take on, Eco Challenge 1998, watching it on TV. I'll never forget that. My brother was doing that kind of stuff at that time. I was doing nothing in my life. And I watched the Eco Challenge on TV, and I'm like, this is the stuff my brother does. It was so inspiring to me. I thought, frig, these people are so confident, and like what they do is so amazing. Maybe if I just did a little bit of what they do, my life would be different. And, you know, the rest of the day is history.
So
it's
always that first step, right? The first inch.
You find where that inspiration where you need to get it, and you convince yourself that you can actually take a chance and make something happen in your life. It's like you're sitting on the couch, step off the couch. Make that your first step. It doesn't have to be monumental. We totally overbuilt. Rome needs to be built in a day because that's the society we live in, right? You know, we've got our iPhones. There's more computing power in my iPhone than put man on the moon the first time. Right, so we have everything, so much of everything at our fingertips, but we overcomplicate ourselves. rather than breaking things down into the smallest, you know, possible goal. You know, make day one about thinking about where it is you want to go.
Yeah, just step. We had a kid we interviewed that said he has a policy called sneakers on. Just got to get his sneakers on in the morning. Forget about everything else. If I can get his sneakers on, maybe then he opens the door and gets out. Right, and it just kind of...
It's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, we have a foundation we started. It's called Impossible to Possible.
Yeah.
The idea came to me at the end of the Running the Sahara expedition because, you know, I was like straight F's in school, basically. Barely got out of high school, dropped out of community college, just not into school when I was young. But in the journey across the Sahara, not only did we learn so much about ourselves in the run, but we learned about culture and people and a whole other world that existed because we were on an adventure. I thought, how awesome would it be to create this organization, take kids on free expeditions. They go with us, and they learn about a place. They teach what they're learning about the place and themselves with schools using that same technology that I use on my expeditions. And classrooms, you know, and schools are engaged all over. Getting to my point, I always tell long stories.
That's okay.
But these young people are in themselves, at a young age, putting their sneakers on. Do you know what I mean? They're right. Doing these first steps to changing the rest of their lives, and that impacts others as well. So you see it. When you see other people making or taking those first steps, it can be the butterfly effect.
Yeah, right? impactful for everybody around. It's kind of like a pinball machine, right? That ball just bounces around. And my mother used to inspire everybody. Spartan Race inspires you.
Look at your story.
Yeah.
You know, I just touched your hand and you got that.
You're
going to
get sick.
You're gonna, you know, look at the you know, how you started the whole deal. And now it's like 5 billion people are going to the races.
Yeah.
You know, it's unbelievable.
Slightly,
it's a movement.
Slightly less than 5 billion, but not much less.
Almost the population of the planet. Yeah, 3/4 of them. But the thing is you've got something that... I meet them. Yeah. I meet these people. I've never done a Spartan Race, but I meet these people that have. And for them, it's life-altering to go and do something. They leave their day-to-day during the week, right? They go on a weekend. They participate in an event. And it changes them because it gives them the confidence now to go back to whatever it is that they're doing during the week, and try something new.
No doubt about it.
Right? It's about obstacles and just sort of overcoming them without sounding cheesy.
Okay, next week you have Miss Vermont from Miss USA pageant, and also a multiple death race finisher, which equals an extremely epic human being named Neely Fortune, who actually just race directed Agogi Summer. So, yeah, awesome. Johnny.
Yeah, you don't want to miss this. And to make sure you don't miss it, whether you watch on YouTube or listen on iTunes, just make sure you subscribe. You'll get notifications about every episode, including this great one with Neely. And I ask you to share it with your friends, too. Join our mission, get people off the couch, change lives.
From doing all these expeditions, do the silly things in life still get under your skin? Or does stuff roll off your shoulders?
Yeah, you know, I have this sort of, I believe in karma, right? And there's this karmic balance, and I'll tell you what I mean by that. When I stand in a line at the grocery store or at the bank, I'm always in the slowest line. There could be one person in front of me. That's the slowest line. But I always get a parking spot. Today, when I came to see you, parking spot right in front of the hotel. There's no parking anywhere, but I got a parking spot. So, you know, there's balance in life, right? Trade-offs. I get parking spots, but I always have long lineups. So I try to look at everything in the world that way. Because first 30 years of my life, glass half empty. Second part of my life, glass is half full. And I try to live that way.
We interviewed a paraplegic a couple days ago, actually. And he said, forget about glass half empty, glass half full. Glass is overflowing.
I love that. That's beautiful. That's beautiful. You know, and again, it's that whole personal perspective, right? It's how you look at things. And what I encourage other people to do is you know what? You got to work at being... If you're an unhappy person, like I was a very unhappy person when I started. I was unhappy with myself. It took me time to realize that that wasn't everybody else around me that was making my life miserable. I was making my own life miserable. But I worked at being happy. I wasn't generally a happy person.
Sure.
And I've spent the last 20 years of my life feeling like, I guess you could say, the glass is overflowing then. You know, I just feel good. You know, occasionally, you know, you get set. I'm a dad. I got my daughters. You know, some, they're sick. We have good days and bad days, right? Yeah. But at the end of the day, you look back or you look at your life and the state of where it's at and where your head is at. If you've got passion in your life, you've got everything.
Yeah.
If you've got happiness in your life and health, and I hope you get healthy with those things.
I hope so.
Then you got everything. What else do you want?
We've been using this tagline, which came up in one of the podcasts. A healthy person has a million wishes. A sick person has one wish. I have one wish right now. Tell us about the last expedition. I heard it was an easy one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was the thing. We flew in, flew out, you know, 5-star dining, that whole thing. No. Yes. You know, So the goal was across these three regions. It's Canada's 150th birthday. We wanted to share the Canadian Arctic with as many people as we possibly could through this expedition. So we said, let's go to three regions of the Canadian Arctic, cross them unsupported.
Yeah.
And as Canadians, we like to get out there in the winter. I'm going to do one traverse, Baffin Island, on skis. Another traverse, the Torne Gap Mountain Range, on foot. Third traverse, the Northwest Territories, on the Mackenzie River, on a fat bike. I have a lot of Arctic experience, and I'm going to keep the story short because I know you're not feeling well. But at any rate, the first leg, we got dropped by helicopter, really remote part of the Torne Gap Mountains, the Saklik Fjord, which goes up into a brook. So you're talking about a 210-kilometer traverse of this mountain range. And a very important place to the Inuit people. This is the spiritual home of all of the Inuit spirits, I guess, is in these mountains. So anyhow, dropped at Saklik Fjord, and it's a polar bear-dense region, so we wanted to get moving in as quickly as we could. There was myself, my teammate Stefano Gregoretti from Italy, and our Inuit dog, who was basically our polar bear, you know, warning signal. So I and our buddy. So we go up off this, and they had a lot of snow. A storm had moved through five days before.
What's your plan on polar bear coming for you?
You know what? There is no plan. I mean, you have, you know, you protect yourself. You have firearms and stuff, and you don't want to use it. And you have flares, and you have all these lines of defense. But at the end of the day, you know, the last really bad mauling happened in that area. Look, we're in their land. Yeah. We're respectful of them. Yeah. I've spent a lot of time up in the Arctic learning from the Inuit. I just avoid all situations. You know, I want to be smart, and I have redundancies with all my gear on every expedition that I go on, especially in these more remote places. But when it comes to polar bears, you don't mess around. It's just not a good situation. It is a human-polar bear interaction, not good, right? Yeah. So anyhow, so we're making our way up this fjord, and I'm on the Nakvak Brook, and it starts to narrow into a canyon, and I had three choices. Navigate up a very steep bank on this side, heading up into some mountains with snow slope that was really unstable because it never gets snow there. They had this massive dump. Same thing on the left-hand side. Center was a river that was partially frozen. A lot of current, so there was open water. We tried the right-hand side, had to down climb because the snow was completely unsafe. So I moved ahead because I had the most experience in scouting, and I scouted the ice and the trains and these series of small waterfalls that were going up the brook, and the canyon narrowed to about as wide as this room, say 15 feet wide. And Stefano would haul the sleds up and bring everything else. Now, thankfully, in this section, we weren't roped in. But I was climbing the last waterfall, very low angle, but small pitch, very careful, but understanding the ice conditions completely, because I've been in so many different ice conditions. And I moved ahead one step, tested some ice, it was wind blowing, seemed solid, one more step, and I went in. And I had snowshoes on, because the snow previous was a meter deep in some sections. And so your hands instinctively go out when you're in, it's 30 below, and I'm up to here. And the first thing that comes to my mind is, how the frig did this happen? Like, I couldn't compute that this had never happened. I've done tons of Arctic expeditions, extreme cold, on ice, of all conditions, this has never happened. And it's just, in my mind, it's like, what did I do? Like, how did I get myself into this hole? And then I'm thinking about my kids, my wife. And I was scared. I'd be perfectly honest. Like, there's no bravado. I was friggin' scared shitless. And I'm in the water.
I don't know why you're scared. It's 30 below, and you're swimming,
Most people would say that would be reinvigorating, like a sauna or a spa with all that current,
You're scared.
You know? I'm freaked out. And so my snowshoes, are pulling me under. The current's coming to my chest, and I'm in the hole like this, my snowshoes are pulling me under, and I know in my mind I got a minute and a half at most before I can't feel anything, I'm going to slip under. And there was that gap of air between the ice and the current, so I knew that there was air under there. Like, if I went under, I'm going to be able to breathe for a certain amount of time. Just the whole thing was not good. So Stefano tried to get towards me. He couldn't. Thank God we weren't roped in, because it was vertical walls of rock all the way down. We would have pulled, everything would have gone under, because the weight of the rope and everything else and the gear pulling down on the ice. So for whatever reason, I hit this weak point. I went in. He tries to get to me, he can't, but he's very close to me. He's within a few feet on the shore away from me. He can't get to me. The ice is caving in. And I'm swinging my legs. He said to me, what are we going to do? I said, I got to get my boots off. And these snowshoes are pulling me under. And so I tried to pull my snowshoe off. And as I was doing that, I was pulling my leg and pulling, you know the Dion's? You must have Dion because you're from. So anyway, I pull my leg through and my snowshoe, my hamstring's still sore. I shouldn't have done that. My leg hyperextended and the crampon caught the ice on the other side. And I was like, what the frick? I can't, but like, that happened, and I pushed against it, And as I push back, Stefan will grab my pack. He's got freakishly long arms, and he's a big guy. And he just reached down and pulled as hard as he could. And honestly, I came out of that hole, and I was laughing. I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but I was laughing because I couldn't believe that this had happened, that I'd survived, and I'm going to see my family again. I mean, it sounds so overly dramatic, but really, that's the first thing. So I'm rolling around in the snow. I get the moisture off as much as I can. Again, I've done tons of expeditions. I've got everything I need. I pull my gear off. I put my down suit on. And then we spend the next 2 days fighting storms and snow and being bivouacked for 24 hours waiting to finally figure a plan of extraction, right? I'm not calling for a helicopter. Winds were 100 km an hour. There's no way I'm going to put anybody else at risk. Our photographer had been following some caribou with some Inuit guides coming from the other side, from Kangiksulujuaq, which was the other end. That's where I was headed to. And I called him on our sat phone when we were in the tent, and making the story shorter, how we got to where we camped. And I said, where are you? He said, give me your GPS coordinates. I did. And he said, we're about 55K, whatever, 35 miles, something like that, away from you. I said, dude, you got to come get us because my body's imploding. I haven't gone to the bathroom in 3 days. I can't eat. My body was hypothermic. It just was not bouncing back. And I seriously considered throwing the towel in on the next two legs because I know I've been across Baffin. Baffin is gnarly. Where we were, not so bad. Baffin is a whole different set of insane. It gets down to minus 65, winds well over 100 miles an hour. You know, steep pitches on ice. The rivers are 20% grade. Some of them, you know, it's crazy. Full of overflow on Baffin. That's where we were headed next. And I thought, man, I don't know if I want to do this. Anyhow, Stefano said something to me, and it really brought me back to reality. He said, look at it, man, you can't look at it as a failure because we were either going to be really lucky or really dead. And we ended up really lucky.
All right.
We got to move forward. And I thought about all the youth ambassadors that we test. We call them I2B youth ambassadors on our youth trips. They get injured. Something wrong happens. And then they get down. What are they going to do? I say, you guys have to find a way to reinvent yourself. That's what it's about. Sure. Sometimes it's not about the way you think it's going to be. You have to change things. That's what going on an expedition is all about. I thought, oh, frig, I can't be a hypocrite to all that. So I decided to carry on. And my body eventually bounced back. It was hard, but it bounced back. And then by the end, I felt great.
So the big takeaway, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, is if you're having a tough time getting off the couch, Spartan the f*** up because...
That I never heard that before. It's kind of like, I like that. I mean, can I use that?
Just use it. It's yours. Spartan the f*** up. Come on, guys. Girls.
Right on.
Right? I'd shake your hand.
Let's
do it.
We can do a fist bump.
You better wash your hands.
Okay, that guy really does make the impossible possible. I mean,
he makes you look like you're standing still.
Woo! Woo! I'd love to go hang out with him. You guys, there's some good Canadians.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah, there's some.
Yeah, a couple.
There are a few good Canadians. I mean, so, yeah, but Ray, in terms of intensity and what he brings, and he's a great example. We've talked about a lot of people. Charlie Engel, who he did the run across the Sahara with. Charlie talked about his addictive personality in the past and how he's channeled that into positive pursuits. And Ray's another great example where Ray said, I was not living the healthiest life at all. I was smoking a couple packs a day. I was overweight. And then one day he said, I got to channel this somewhere better. What he takes on, you know, whether it's running across the desert in 50 degrees, whether it's going across Siberia.
50 degrees.
50 degrees Celsius. Sorry. Yeah. Double it and add 30. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Double it and add 30.
Double it and add 30. That's how it works. Yeah. Just absolutely astonishing. But the cool thing with Ray is he will just dive into anything head first. And as he says, impossible to possible, there's nothing that he would say is impossible. If you said to him, you've got to do this unbelievable challenge, he'd say, awesome, let's figure it out, break it down and do it. And that attitude and that such personality, and you look at where people do get into trouble because they don't channel it the right ways. Here's a guy who is just turned the world on its head.
I think a lot of those attributes of being, you know, having an addictive personality, which many of us have, if you channel it in the right way, it becomes powerful. That's clearly what he's done.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? Yeah, for sure. And again, that's a very common thread through what we do. Joe Polish, another guy that connected you with a whole bunch of other people.
Same thing.
Like just a guy who's created a multi-million-dollar business connecting people.
Most of the
people
CEOs, and, most of the people we meet, they've got it.
All of them have the ability, and you've already said it, is to channel their energy, right?
Right.
It's to focus it, if you think like a laser beam, right? I mean, they bring all of this stuff together. They're able to collect it from all over the place, but then they're able to bring it into one stream and then kind of shoot it out, if you will.
Like a root system.
Don't get me started. But dude, like, they're so sick. They're all going to be naturalists by the end of it. But okay, so say in terms of shooting it out, well, what he does do is he takes his adventures and then he broadcasts it to kids in classrooms. Yeah. And for me, that's the most exciting part, right? Because I think the ultimate goal with loving the woods and nature is inspiring the kiddos to be like, hey, all of this magic that is right here on their phone actually really exists. Like the avatars and the Narnias are right out here. And he's saying like, come on, kids, like, join me on my expedition. And they're getting to see these extraordinary feats. And it's so inspirational for kids. And we've talked about transmedia from Jeff Gomez, right? To be able to be transported from their classroom into these expeditions and know that that is a possible way you can live your life.
Yeah, it's funny. I love on Facebook when Ray will post something and it will always be, you know, I'm here at the Arctic Circle watching the sun go down and sharing that with you. And like he'll live stream it. He has sponsors that, you know, that provide this satellite link. And so and cool. He truly will bring everyone into this and allow them to be part of it. And so there's this Impossible to Possible where he's got teen ambassadors that are really going all over the world. They're setting up adventures running through the jungle and through deserts and across the Arctic. And, Ray's been to the North Pole, to the South Pole, but it's not about him. And that's the really cool thing is it really isn't about him. He does these things in order to raise awareness, in order to raise funds, in order to allow other people to tap into this. And it really is just about it's so much bigger a purpose. Very, very, very inspiring. Yeah.
Mycelial, right. If you will.
Well, if you want more that's inspiring, like maybe not exactly like Ray, but everybody in their own way, right?
That's
go
right.
To Spartan.com/podcast where you could learn a lot more. And we'll wrap it up with a charity one more time.
Yeah, so his charity is Impossible to Possible. And check that out. It's all about how to take youth, show them what they're capable of, and show them how to use that to help others. Truly a great, great enterprise.
Thank you for watching another epic story of success. If you like our message, please share Spartan Up with your friends and subscribe on iTunes, YouTube, or wherever you catch our show, maybe in the woods. Spartan Up is brought to you by Spartan Race. To find a race near you, visit Spartan.com.